Welcome to Inside Track. Santa Aurelia LLC is solely responsible for its content and pays for it. The views and opinions expressed on Inside Track are those of the host and guests and not necessarily endorsed by KVOI or its advertisers, but they should be. And now, here's Bruce Ash.
Hello, insiders, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you wherever you may be. This is your host, Bruce Ash. Eb's on assignment today at the NRA annual convention being held here in Tucson. And I want to welcome you to a very special pre-election edition of Inside Track. What a week. President Trump was in town this past Monday. If you were there, you know it was a great crowd. Wasn't it dramatic to see Air Force One roll up to the Tucson Jet Center? That's one big airplane. About 12,000 cheering fans, not the 2,000 fans reported in the Arizona Daily Star. We'd all been waiting in the hot sun, nearly 100 degrees for about 2 hours. The crowd's energy was definitely infectious. Uh-oh. I said infectious. Can I say that on the radio? I'm not sure. Maybe I need to put my mask on again. It was a sweltering sun. It was amazing to see the president in a dark suit. You know, we spoke for about 70 minutes, no water swigging, nonstop, serious at times, very entertaining, no sweating at all. When he left, his presidential limousine was ready to take him to Air Force One about a couple hundred yards away, but he bounded off the stage, and, you know, he practically sprinted to the plane ahead of most of his staff. The man has about 40 pounds and 6 years on me, but he kicked my rear end. I was out of breath after the event, and he sure didn't seem like it to me. Now, compare him with his election opponent, Sleepy Joe Biden. They debated this week. You may know that. Biden was weak. He pulled a Bush, that's a George H.W. Bush, and looked at his watch toward the end of the debate, no doubt to check if it was time for his energy drink or maybe to see if it was past his nighty-night time. You know, even in a much less combative debate, he was lost most of the time. He really told some whoppers. Like no one lost their health care with Obamacare? God, are you kidding me? He still denies his son's criminal China, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, corrupt connections. And what was really great is his accuser, Tony Bobulinski. This is the guy that gave a press conference shortly before the debate started, brought the devices where he has all of the proof of the connections, and these are his. This is a former Navy captain. He is no Russian plant. Tony sat within about 40 feet away of the candidate, Mr. Biden, with all that incredible evidence of the Biden Inc. crime family. I'm sure it freaked Joe out. In the last 30 minutes of the debate, Sleepy Joe practically disappeared into the wallpaper. But when his black eyes looked into the camera claiming he was the face of America, I practically choked. His staff must have experienced heart failure. Joe Biden will be rejected by the voters in this election. Since the debate, he's playing damage control. He's a shell of a man. He's a Trojan horse. He's a crook. He's not up for the job. And even before he might actually get a chance to take the oath of office to defend the Constitution, he has already defiled it. And he's under the influence of the communist Chinese government. It's been another pretty news-filled week, and we have a jam-packed show for you today. Starting off the show, this almost real fall afternoon is Congressional District 2 nominee Brandon Martin, who will join us right after the first break. speaking after the bottom of the hour break is Manhattan Institute advocate for school choice, Ray Domenico. I've only said this like 18 times, Ray Domenico, and he is a very, very bright guy that I think you're going to enjoy listening to. We'll finish our time together today speaking with LD11 incumbent House member Mark Fincham, who has a significant test for his reelect. We'll discuss the issues with him. So listen up. We have another great show for you today on Inside Track. Many thanks to our great supporters of Inside Track, Gary Imus and my Inside Track partner, who's not here today, Eb Wilkinson at Imus Wilkinson Asset Management. Jamie Kipper and her dad, Gary Kipper, from Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, and the kids from Corazon Cabinets, Joy, Allie, and David. I do business with all of them. So should you. Speaking of Corazon, do you have a home improvement project you want to start before the holidays? And you're worried if you can afford the luxury you deserve? Corazon Cabinets sells quality J&K, Conestoga, and Waypoint cabinets. And Corazon offers professional design resources for your home. Call Corazon Cabinets at 488-2266 and schedule a visit to the showroom. It's an easy number, 488-2266. Big doings at Corazon as they move into their new showroom at 4700 South Park Avenue. All that work is just about complete. Call Monday for some even greater specials on their quality products for your home. And when you call, let them know that you heard this ad with Eb and Bruce on Inside Track to get an additional 5% discount on their already low wholesale prices. All right, when we return from the break, we'll welcome Brandon Martin, Republican nominee for CD2, running against someone most of us have never seen anywhere, alcoholic, disabled, and dysfunctional Ann Kirkpatrick, who has missed more votes this session than any other member of the U.S. House. Oh, brother. Thanks for listening to Inside Track. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Brandon. I'm proud to welcome my good friends at Tucson Iron and Metal Retail to Inside Track as an advertiser. Jamie Kipper and her staff are conservation experts. They sell round and square steel tubing, metal plate and roofing materials, as well as new and used steel, aluminum, and stainless steel to ranchers, artists, interior designers, roofers, and do-it-yourselfers, just like all of the listeners here. Tucson Iron and Metal Retail is open Monday through Fridays, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 a.m. to noon. Tucson Iron and Steel Retail, 701 East 36th Street. Call 520-209-1576 or go to TucsonIronRetail.com. And when you do call, mention this ad and receive an additional 10% discount on their already great prices.
I'm Eb Wilkinson with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. I don't ever want you to be dependent on government ever again. I want you to become financially independent. You will never, ever have to depend on socialist security for your survival. We are here to guide you to financial independence. That's imuswilkinson.com, 777-1911. That's
777-1911. Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce here. The temperatures are finally dropping, and it's election season. Our first guest today is Republican nominee in Congressional District 2, Brandon Martin. Welcome to Inside Track, Brandon. You're campaigning hard. Where are you this afternoon?
Good afternoon, Bruce. I'm glad to be with you. And right now, we just got back to Sierra Vista a little bit ago. We were in Tucson this morning for a Back the Blue Line event. And then we went down to Benson, and we had a flag wave out there. And we've come back down to Sierra Vista now for a couple more meetings. We're out there on the trail hard working to win this election.
So are you feeling the same intensity that I'm feeling about this election and your chances to win in CD2? It sure seems like there's an awful lot of people who are coming around and see what's going on and are going to be voting this fall. Do you agree?
Absolutely. There's a great enthusiasm right now. We as Republicans are picking up the momentum. We've really got the wind at our back. And just attended a rally with President Trump this last Monday, and the energy was just electric. It was great. He put on a great rally, had a great message. And we're going to continue working so we can win this and bring back CD2 to Republican hands.
Yeah, and I know that he endorses you and is a big supporter. You really will be a voice for the president's administration if you go to Congress. Hey, I Googled Ann Kirkpatrick for news. I could hardly find anything. What is she doing? She still appears to be absent. What say you, Brandon?
She is absent. She's not engaging at all. I have people telling me that they email her office. They try to get in contact with her. They don't even get responses anymore. News channels, KGUN, others, the Vail Community Forum. She's not even, her office isn't even responding to people. It's not that she's even saying no. She's just flat out not responding. She's hoping that her position on the committees that she's on and the money she's raised is going to carry her to victory. But we're out there. We're winning every day. We're outworking her every day on the ground. And we're going to win this. And there are going to be some people who are shocked. But it's not going to be anyone who's involved with this campaign. It's not going to be anyone in CD2 that knows how hard we're working, because we're putting in the work that it's going to take to win.
Yeah, so Kirkpatrick told reporters at the Arizona Daily Star she was open to a debate. But with just over a week to go, before the election, has there been any reply to actually debate you? And what does she have to fear?
No, they don't have, and there's no reply. We even went to Twitter and directly messaged her. We directly put it out there that we want to debate, and she won't debate us. And she doesn't want to raise our name ID any, because we have the better platform. We have the platform of a great economy, lower taxes, record lows in unemployment, security on the border. I mean, just across the board, we have a better platform than her. And if she did debate, we would let all of CD2 and anyone watching know it. And that's why she won't get in there with us. And you know, it's unfortunate, because the people of this district, they deserve a voice. They deserve to hear the platforms of the candidates who hope to represent them. But Ann hasn't been representing us. She's been absent. She's voting by proxy. So CD2 needs a real representative, and I want to be that for them.
So, you know, she was the one, this was reported in the Arizona Daily Star, that she wanted to debate, but so she's changed her mind and now refuses to debate, refuses to have any kind of contact at all. Is that right?
I don't think she changed her mind, Bruce. I think it was, whenever her staff or her, whoever said that, I don't think she had any intention of debating. I think that was just put out there so she could appear like she's in good faith, but I don't think she had any intention of debating, because like I said, there is not one area of governing that I think she could compete with us. We would absolutely win the debate, hands down. We're winning the debate anyway. She's conceding by absence. It's just, we have a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm, and we're going to win.
So I see, you know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, and I think particularly on Twitter, I see an awful lot of activity on CD2, whether it's your campaign or just, you know, regular Joes and Sues who are out there. I feel that, that you know, energy on Facebook and on Twitter for you. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And it's been growing. It's we can feel the momentum right now. We are gaining. With 10 days left, we are finishing strong. We're going to sprint across the finish line, and we are going to win this. And I know that there's an energy out there. The people are excited. You know, I have Democrats, I have independents coming up to me, and they understand that Ann has not been representing them. And that's something that speaks to a lot of people. They want someone working for them, especially when you're making over $174,000 a year. You should be doing your job.
So when she says she's voting by proxy, what does that mean exactly? I hear that it means that, you know, her vote is read into the congressional record, but you can't vote by proxy, can you?
It is unconstitutional. She should be present voting, but House rules and Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, they like to play their own game. They like to make up their own rules. I mean, we see it at every level. Joe Biden in the debate the other night, flat out lying about fracking.
Yes, he did.
Whether it's Mark Kelly, he wants to take away our guns. He works for China. He's received money from China. So is the Biden family. And Ann Kirkpatrick is dishonest because she doesn't want to debate. She doesn't want to do her job. She just wants to collect her salary and do what Nancy Pelosi tells her to do.
So when she has voted And again, this isn't Bruce's number or Brandon's number. This comes from govtrack.com. She votes over the past several years, 97.3% with the Democrats. So she stands for all of the things that, you know, we object to, whether it's open borders, she's flagged the USMCA. I mean, she's just nowhere in step with the district, is she?
Not at all. She wants open borders. She wants to raise your taxes. She supports the Green New Deal. She would be horrible for the economy, but we don't have to worry about that because she's not going to win. We're going to win. We're going to keep the Senate. Senator Martha McSally is going to get elected. President Trump is going to get reelected, and we're going to bring back, this is going to be, like President Trump says, these next 10 months after the election, they're going to be the best 10 months the economy the U.S. has ever seen.
I agree.
We're
going to
come back stronger than ever.
Yeah. So when the president discontinued flights from China and started fighting against the virus, and Kirkpatrick was working to impeach the president, she voted for impeachment, and she wasn't focused on fighting the virus. But now, you know, when there is a need to fight, she's nowhere to be found. All right. So she's missed a lot of votes during her detox treatments for alcoholism and submitted her votes to the congressional record. She's abandoned her constituents. She shows little sign of getting back to work, even if she does manage to win her election. When you're elected, okay, what are your priorities? What are your first priorities for Congressional District Number 2?
First and foremost, it's to help the president get the economy going again. We've been shut down for way too long. We've got to get the economy going again. There is no end in sight to this shutdown with the Democrats. They want to keep the government shut down. They want to keep the economy shut down. They want to stall this past the election so they can remain in power. We've got to get people back to work. Every single paycheck out there is essential. So first and foremost, getting the economy going again, cutting regulations and red tape. And then here in CD2, we are the border. We've always had the border issue. So we're going to continue to secure the border. We're going to make sure we have safe communities here in CD2. And really, we have a lot of potential here in CD2, potential for business and development. And just, we have to get back to work. So those are going to be the two main focuses. And then after that, we're going to keep working for the people of CD2.
So I think you favor the president's change in our trade laws with Canada and with Mexico, with the USMCA. Ann Kirkpatrick was not in favor of USMCA, and she supports open borders. Where are we right now with the wall construction, and how much more will we likely be able to complete here in Arizona before the end of the year? Do you have that information?
Yes, we're continuing every day to put up more sections of wall. Over 200 miles of wall has gone up, and we're going to keep putting up sections of the wall. We're just going to keep going. The president's not going to stop, and I believe strongly, I've told you that we're going to win at all three levels here at the House, the Senate, and the presidency. We're going to win, and we're going to keep this going. We're going to secure the border. We're going to get the economy stronger than ever before the China virus. We're going to see record numbers in unemployment again. We're going to get this thing going.
So back to trade for just a second, Brandon. The border crossing the two border crossings really in Nogales are way, way undersized. We're losing all sorts of trade coming through that port of entry. With USMCA, there's likely to be far more trade back and forth between U.S. and Mexico. Martha actually helped get capital funding to increase the Mariposa access point a few years back, but there's more that needs to be done. Are you in favor of increasing our ability to send our goods into Mexico through that Mariposa entry?
Absolutely, we need to increase our trade with Mexico, but one of my focuses representing here in CD2 is going to be improving the port of entry in Douglas right here in the district, redoing that port of entry there, making sure that we can continue with the two-port system, get the commercial traffic through one, pedestrian traffic through the other, make sure we can use technology and do our screening and make sure that we're secure and that we're increasing trade across the border, because really that goes with getting the economy going again. We need to make sure that our number one trade partner right here is, we have the best port, we have the best infrastructure and roads and things to get this done. So we're gonna make sure that that's a priority.
Hey, that's a great point, and I apologize for not remembering. There is that other port of entry in Douglas. Do you have any kind of information on what the numbers are that goes through there commercially? With the products and so on.
Not off the top of my head, as far as
Probably far less than Nogi
right now, but it's. It's when there's normal traffic and normal flow, it's billions of dollars a year coming through our ports of entry. And right now with the shutdown, and I just actually met with the mayor down in Douglas, and we were talking about how the trade is coming along, and really it's been affected heavily by the COVID shutdown. With everything going on with this virus, our trade numbers have gone down significantly, and that's why I don't have them. But other than historical numbers, we're going to get those back up and going again. But with the wall going up right now, that's going to help, and we're going to redo the port of entry as well to make sure we have good trade.
Well, great point. I'm glad you pointed that out, because that is a big deal to CD2 voters and for the economies in Douglas as well as in Sierra Vista where you reside. That'd be a real significant shot in the arm. So you've been on the go constantly. Alcoholic Congress lady has been doing nothing to campaign in this cycle. You've got a ground strategy. What can Inside Track listeners do to help you win?
This election is going to come down to turnout. And so if you're listening to this radio show right now, or you listen to it later on podcast, we need you to tell your friends, your family, your neighbors to get out and vote. Call all your friends, family, neighbors, and tell them to call 10 people and them to call 10 people. This is going to come down to turnout. We're seeing record numbers of ballots being returned right now, and we have to make sure that Republicans show up. And right now, we're expecting a huge number on election day, but we need to make sure every single person that had a mail-in ballot gets that ballot returned. We have to make sure that we win this, because the future of our country is at stake here. The president said it best. One side is offering opportunity and prosperity, the other lawlessness and chaos, and we as Republicans have the best platform, so we have to win this.
Hey, Brandon, thanks for joining us today. Folks, if you live in CD2, vote for Brandon Martin. He is a real conservative. This is a man who is going to represent us according to our views and values in Congress. This is a man who knows what it takes to get the job done. So, Brandon, thanks for being on the show. We'll try to get you back on for our next week. We're kind of doing a round robin with all kinds of candidates, and hope you can join us for a couple minutes at that time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bruce. I look forward to it.
All right, Tom. Let's go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break. You're listening to Inside Track. When we come back, we're going to talk with school choice advocate from Manhattan Institute, Ray Domenico. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Jamie Kipper and her father, Gary Kipper, from Tucson Iron and Metal. What are they going to see when they come through the gates?
So when they come on in, they'll see our building up front. People have free rein to then go out and look in the yard. So it's not a typical scrapyard with a ton of big machinery. We have a couple of forklifts around, but that's about it, just to help move material. So when you come in, it's all organized by material, whether it's square tubing, angle iron, roofing, and then there is a pile in the back, which is still organized and easy to get through, but that's stuff that comes over from the scrap. So we're unique in that we get stuff in from the scrap, which a lot of artists and people will like or reuse, whether it's a sink that someone needs for their house. We sell literally anything made of metal.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Wouldn't it be great if political leaders could create that country again? Learn how to do exactly that, one family at a time, with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, imuswilkinson.com, 777-1911, 777-1911.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Dang, there's a lot of commercials on this station. Our guest for the next several minutes is Ray Domenico, Senior Fellow and Director of Educational Policy at the Manhattan Institute, an institute that we very much support here at Inside Track. Ray has been involved with public sector and not-for-profit sectors on education and was recently tasked with reporting on the nation's largest school system in New York City. Welcome, Ray.
Glad to be here.
School choice isn't just an important issue out west where we live here in Tucson, but all over the country, isn't it?
It's a critically important issue, particularly in large cities and in the northern Midwest, and certainly in New York City and other large cities. It's the best thing that we have found, school choice in the form of charter schools or other type of choice, to really help out the kids who need it most, low-income, Black and Hispanic students, low-income students from all communities have benefited greatly from the growth of school choice in the last few decades.
Yeah. Ray, on October 6th, you wrote an opinion piece for the Philadelphia Inquirer titled, "If Charter Schools Help Kids of Color, Why Aren't the Democrats More Supportive?" So why aren't the Democrats more supportive?
Yes, this essay was based on some surveying that we did in five political battleground states in the Midwest, and we found in that survey done by Rasmussen Reports for us support for the concept of choice, support for the belief that school choice improves educational outcomes for everyone, and support for public funding of charter schools. Despite this, the Democratic platform this year calls for unnecessary regulation of charter schools. And I think the key is that, you know, some people are getting disrupted by the growth of charter schools. Many, many charter schools, if not most, are non-union. The National Education Association, the largest teachers union in the United States, has actually called for a moratorium on the creation of any new charters, and also to take existing charters and put them under control of their local school districts. The same school districts which have failed, the students were flocking to charter schools.
You know, when I have experts like you on the show and they're writing in different publications, I oftentimes like to look at the comments that the article engenders. And one, you know, just stuck out very clearly to me. This writer says, "How awful that poor kids are stuck in bad schools. Schools prevented from competition by elected leaders because unions give them money. Parents should have a choice. Not only charter, but Catholic and other private schools." Boy, there are just tons of parents who feel that way. I have two grown sons, you know, with now kids, you know, just on the cusp of going to school. And they're scared to death of putting their kids in a government-run school.
Well, exactly right. That commenter had it exactly right. Nobody gets forced to use a private or parochial or charter school. You know, they're just given the option. And what we have found in the cities that we have studied, the biggest users of charter schools and school choice tend to be the African American community, because they're the ones least well served by the public schools. Up until now, the issue has been simply that of educational quality. And there's plenty of research to show that these more disadvantaged students have an advantage when they go to charter schools. This is not to say that all public schools in the country are terrible. There are some fine public schools. A lot of them tend to be in wealthy suburbs, you know, and they're not available to poor kids. But as the debate has moved forward, particularly this year, a lot of parents from all communities are getting concerned about some of the rhetoric and the policies that are being pushed now in the service of anti-racism. Some commentators and some officials have started to argue that the very concept of academic achievement is somehow racist. The notion that, you know, you should measure how often children come to school or participate. And, you know, in the current pandemic, many school districts are not reporting the engagement of students. And they say, well, we don't want to make them look bad. And this is completely wrong. Black parents understand this. White parents understand this. Everyone understands this. But you have this intellectual elite that's pushing a very destructive view of education now. And a lot of folks are looking for alternatives to the government-run schools.
I think it's critical to ask in a year when equal opportunity for Black Americans is so in the news, why is it that Republicans, who the left and the Democrats just absolutely pillory over what they refer to as a racist view of the world, they favor school choice and Democrats don't? I mean, if you were trying to raise the people who have supported you as much as Blacks and Latinos have over the years, why is it that you want to keep everybody, not everybody, Ray, but so many people without the advantage of a great education?
Yeah, exactly right. That was the motivation for us commissioning these surveys in these five states, because we sensed that the National Party was out of touch with its own constituents. This is, unfortunately, it's a rather recent development. People disagreed with President Obama on a lot of things. There were some parts of his education program I didn't like. But actually, when he was president, he was a great supporter of charter schools, as were many moderate Democrats.
Right.
And in some ways, it was a compromise that conservatives took, because the deal sort of was, well, we'll support charter schools and we won't push for vouchers or other sort of things. Well, that has all fallen apart now because the Democratic Party has walked away. And so ever since the last year or so of the Obama administration, the Democratic Party has moved more into the arms of the teachers' unions. And I guess they saw the impact the charters were having on enrollment and such. And so now that bipartisan consensus is no longer there. There is hope that's come from the Supreme Court earlier this year with the ruling this summer, the Espinoza decision that opens up the door, to support of religious schools. Some people are thinking very creatively about whether that decision allows or even would require a state that does issue charters to stop excluding religious organizations from getting those charters. That will be a legal battle, but many people are starting to think, who are thinking about this, are sensing that there might be an opening.
Yeah.
So there might be a way to, get around the political opposition here. But if the court is going to continue to rule that parents have a right to choose their child's education and the government cannot discriminate against religious organizations, that would open up more opportunities for alternatives to the district school systems.
So are teacher unions the problem, or is it just the nature of large urban school districts to be as dysfunctional as what they've become?
I've spent time working in and around the largest school system in the country. I think there is a dysfunctionality that is the bigger problem than teachers' unions. There are problems. Sometimes the work rules are too restrictive, obviously. This has really come up in the COVID situation. Districts are not being able to require their teachers to actually interact with students from day to day. It varies from state to state, but this thing is happening. The spending, certainly, we have a mayor in New York who spends money like nobody's business, and he's paying out back pay to teachers, $900 million worth, by the way, for work that was done 15 years ago, and the city is essentially bankrupt because of COVID. So that's a big problem, right? Where I do hold the teachers' unions directly responsible is for this opposition to alternatives. They believe so strongly that their way of doing business can work in the large school systems, they shouldn't be afraid of a little competition. Even in New York, which has over 120,000 students in the city in charter schools, it's still only about 10-11% of the population. The bulk of the kids are still in public schools, but I think they see, the walls beginning to crumble, and that's why they want to shut down the option of charters.
Yeah, both of our kids attended Jewish day school from grade 1 to grade 6 with one of our kids and grade 1 through grade 8 for our younger son, and got a marvelous education and prepared them, you know, to go into, public schools, high school, and so on. And here in Tucson also, where we do have a pretty dysfunctional school district, it was at one time the largest school district in Arizona, Tucson Unified School District. Mm-hmm. There has been talk about breaking up school district one, and cutting it into smaller pieces. And I guess there probably could be the argument that, well, gee, you're going to have a overlap of expenses and, too much money for administration. But, as it is, only about 50%, I think, actually is 48% of all the educational dollars raised that go into the school district actually make it into the classroom. Is there some wisdom in maybe breaking up some of these large school districts and getting them into a more manageable size?
I think there's a number of ways that can do it. There's a concept that's getting some traction. We're in favor of it. It's called education pluralism. And the concept there is just to recognize the truth, the reality, that different families want different types of schools for their children. They want different curriculum. They want different approaches. They want a different amount of, say, discipline versus more free form, right? And there's nothing wrong with this. That one of the dysfunctions of the large school systems is they try to go for uniformity, and it just doesn't work. So in a pluralistic school system, one would see all different types of schools being offered. The key is that there has to be a mechanism to push the money directly to the school, or else you do run into this problem of, more bloat on the overhead side. But if you could run a public school system the way that charter schools are run, there's a certain amount per student, and it goes to the school, right? And you could even have a situation. There's one of the provinces in Canada does it this way. All of the money follows a child into the school, and then if the school can contract with outsiders for things like professional training or curriculum development, and if they want to buy those services from the district office, they do. If not, they buy it someplace else. So, you can introduce competition in all aspects of this. And so there are creative ways to get around that problem. And I think it is also so necessary because we need all different types of schools. We don't, the one-size-fits-all model just does not work.
So getting back to different choices, here in Tucson, Arizona, on the southern end of Tucson Unified School District, Pueblo High School and Cholla High School have had abysmally poor graduation rates and very, very low standard testing on mathematics and the STEM subjects and so on. A group of citizen leaders put together something called San Miguel High School, where both discipline and uniformity, meaning kids had to wear uniforms to school, and this is a high school, and there was fairly decent support within the business community as well. This was a publicly funded school, but they were able to run it really as a academy would be. One of the interesting parts of San Miguel High School is all of the kids are required to work at least 20 hours a week, and right, their pay goes toward their education in the high school. As a result, right, it's their graduation rates are incredible. Their standardized score, have been going through the roof. Great placement within fine universities, both state and private universities across the country. Are other cities where they've got educational problems, are they looking at alternatives such as like a San Miguel High School that I just described?
That model has been around for a while. In New York and Chicago and other parts of the Northeast, there's a group called the Cristo Rey Network, and it's exactly the model you said. It's a high school. It has a prep school feel to it.
Right.
But one day a week, the kids are working. They get paid for that, and that goes to pay part of their tuition. And they've had great success. in very low-income neighborhoods, both in Chicago and New York and elsewhere. But that's sort of the beauty of school choice. You can get these experiments going on, and when they work, other people can see and perhaps, you know, try and copy it and replicate that model. That's the type of thing that a school district almost never will come up with. You know, it's, you need someone with real fire in the gut and a real belief, one, in the value of these young people, and also a belief in the sense that they can get it done in the right environment. And then, you know, they really push themselves to prove that point.
Hmm. So tell me, do you view and do your colleagues view education as a commodity that does engender free choice how you did this polling through Rasmussen? How do parents in these different areas that you polled, how do they look at education in terms of the things that they're interested in for their children?
Yeah, it was a limited survey. We didn't ask much about the content of education. And I have to say, honestly, we did ask them about the quality of their local district schools. It was middling, but it wasn't awful. You know, they really weren't completely disappointed. That may be because these were statewide surveys.
Mm.
And again, outside of cities, sometimes, you know, in a lot of suburbs, public schools are fine. You know, there's really nothing to complain about there. But so we didn't see that. I shy away a little bit from the term commodity, because education is about preparing young people for the future and the world of work and all of these things that you can measure, their future earnings. But education is all about values. One of the great myths of public education is that it's value free. That's not true. All schools have values. And sometimes the values in the public schools are in conflict with the values of the family, and we think that's something that needs to change. So, you know, when you use the word commodity, we're very able to think about schools in economic terms and look at the effect of competition and things like this, and look at the efficiency of how money's spent. So, and, you know, there is a business aspect to education, but it's also, as I say, it's very value-laden, and we think that's very important. We have to, good schools, particularly religious schools and some charters, think very clearly about the type of people that they're trying to mold, right? The type of adults that they're trying to help create. That's a very important part of this.
Well, and there has been some criticism of schools like BASIS, which started here in Arizona, which is a very, very high-pressure, high-stakes sort of program for children from elementary through high school, that their acceptance policies take out the possibility of getting kids who might not survive or disabled kids, and they're skewing from the very beginning the outcomes. Do you find that to be the case? Is that a criticism of these different performance academies around the country, do you think?
Is it valid? It varies from school to school and, you know, from network to network. I'm not going to say it never happens. I don't think it happens as much, the skewing, as critics complain. One of my colleagues, Marcus Winters, is a PhD economist at Boston University. He did a study in Newark, New Jersey, right across the river from New York City, which has a very high percentage of its kids in charter schools. And without getting into the details, because of the way that people apply to schools in Newark and get assigned to a particular school, he was actually able to replicate a scientific randomized study. And so he was able to conclude with a great deal of certainty that being placed in a charter school in that medium-sized city of Newark created an advantage over what the kids would have had achieved, you know, had they attended the local neighborhood or district school. And that type of research, that analysis kind of, you know, got rid of all of these things, like, are the charter schools skimming the best kids? Or are they getting out difficulty, because in essence, the kids were randomly assigned to one school or another. And there are other studies like that and, you know, other information. We have in New York City, the largest network of schools sounds a little bit like the basis schools you described, Success Academy. Success Academy has about 40 schools in New York City now.
We have about a minute here.
Okay, sure. So anyway, they get tremendous results. They're not for everyone. They apply the rules. And you know, as a parent, I don't. My kids are grown now. I don't know that I would have chosen that particular school. But they get results that blow the socks off of everyone else with low-income kids. And so if a poor parent is willing to put up with that and they're willing to have their kid follow the rules very strictly, they're getting out and they're going to great colleges. So
well Ray, we're going to have to wrap it up there. We're right up against the clock. And thanks very much. I know we went long. Actually, our later guest didn't show up. He didn't call in. And I'm sad he did, but I'm glad he didn't, because we had a chance to really get into some depth. We love Manhattan Institute and hope that we can have you back after this election and things settle down a little.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Hey, until next week, when we'll air our final pre-election wing dinger for my co-host, Eb Wilkinson, who's advocating for the Second Amendment today. This is your host, Bruce Ash, wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon. Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
A lot of the cities and the counties around have initiatives for artists. I think we're one of the premier artist suppliers for steel. First Saturday of every month, you can come down early and actually go through the scrapyard across the street. It's 7 acres of metal. You can walk through with our people and pick out what you want. It's always interesting to see what the artists have done. We've done actually a couple projects with the U of A Engineering Department and Music Department, where the engineering music students came down together. They had to pick something out of the scrap, and they had to build an instrument. And we have one of those in front of the plant. Some really cool things come out of the scrap.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.